Successful people learn how to make their mind work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast.
Everybody think a little bit about what are you going to do over the next year and the next decade, and the actual power that you have to create the results in your life. I had an interesting experience a number of years ago. My mentor, one of the great things about working with Bob Proctor was that he was always urging me. I don't think it was pushing. It was more urging. He was always urging me to really become aware of what I was capable of and the power that I had to create my own life. And I was already doing seminars for a while, but I do believe that this happened in the first year or two that I was actually doing seminars. I was doing a Science of Getting Rich seminar with him in Florida, and I remember that this was like back in the days where I guess I would have had a flip phone or something at that time. I'm really trying to remember exactly when this was. I'm not sure. I may have the date wrong on this. I don't think that matters though. But here, let me just tell you what happened. He was working with me on really stepping into my own power, making things happen in my life and in my business. And towards the end of the event, he said to me, "Where are you going tomorrow?" And I said, "I'm going back to Chicago." And he was going to Pittsburgh. And I said to him, "But here's something interesting. I might get stuck here because when I went back up to my room, there was the little red light was flashing that I had a message on my phone. And when I called home, they were talking about a major snowstorm that was coming through the Midwest. I said, so I might not get home." And he got very, very quiet. He looked me right in the eye and he said, "When are you going to start practicing what you teach?" And I laughed a little bit, but I could also see he was deadly serious. Like, there was no sarcasm in what he was saying to me at all. And I said, "Bob, it's weather. Like, we can't control the weather." And he said, "We can't." And I was like, "Really? This even works for weather? Like, where you're directing your attention?" He said, you have a lot to learn." And I thought, okay, this is interesting. But I didn't really take it all that serious. I knew he was serious, but I didn't take it all that serious. And I just thought, well, you know, whatever. Like, you can't control the weather. That's crazy. So he said to me, "Do you want to ride together in the limo to the airport tomorrow morning?" Because we were both going to leave at the same time. So the limo picked us up at 5 a.m. So I met him downstairs at 5 a.m. We get in the limo. And again, he said to me, "You really need to start using what you teach. You need to really step into what you teach and own your experience." And I'm like, yeah, okay, you know, it can't work for the weather. Like, this is crazy. So I get to the airport and I had a connecting flight. I had to fly through Atlanta and then pick up a connection in Atlanta that would take me to Chicago. So we said goodbye. He went off to Pittsburgh and I go to Atlanta. When I got on the flight in Florida, everything was a go at that point. There was nothing that said that the airlines were going to shut down or flights would be canceled. When I got off the plane in Atlanta, everything, all the boards were, it was just one flight after another that said canceled, 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 canceled. So I walk up to the teller or whatever, and I said, "I'm on this flight going to Chicago." She's like, "No, you're not. It's going to be canceled." She said, the best that we can do is I can get you on a flight out on Wednesday. And if I remember correctly, this was a Monday that we were flying back. And I said, do I have any other options? She's like, no. So I said, okay. She said, we'll put you up in a hotel. So I get my little voucher or whatever it was, and I head to this hotel, and I walk in to this hotel, and it is the sleaziest. I mean, I think every drug dealer and hooker in the five block area that I was in must have been in the lobby of this hotel. It had one of those gates where the teller is actually behind a gate, a metal thing, so you can't rob them or whatever. And they give me a key. I go up to my room. I open the room. The room is, I look at it and I'm like, oh God, this is disgusting. There were toenails on the floor. And I thought, that's it. I am not going to do this. It was like I was getting a message saying that, okay, if you're going to like poo-poo this idea about creating the destiny that you want, then this is what you get. You'll have to tolerate this. And it was a sleaze pit hotel. So I turn around. I go back downstairs. I tell them I'm not staying there. I grabbed the first car that was going back to the airport. I walked in the airport and I walked up to, I figured, well, I can't get a flight, so I'll drive home. So I went to like Avis and all the different, budget and them. Nobody had a car. By that time, they rented all the damn cars because everybody was trying to get home. And this was also around the holiday season. So people were trying to get home for holidays also. So the airport was a mess. There were people everywhere. People sleeping on the floors, like, because everything was canceled. Nobody could go anywhere with the Midwest being shut down. So I can't get a car. And I'm like, okay, I'm going home. I really made up my mind. I'm going home. So I go back up to the ticket counter and I said, are there any flights that are going to Chicago today at all that aren't canceled? And she said, everything's going to be canceled. She's like, forget going back today. And I said, would you look in your computer? So she gave me this it was aggravating her. And she looked in the computer and she said, there's one flight that goes out tonight at 9 o'clock, but I'm telling you, it's going to be canceled. And if you take your name off of this flight that goes out on Wednesday, I might not be able to get you in for several days. Like, you might be stuck here all week. And I just kept thinking to myself, I'm going home. I said, is there any seats left on that flight at 9 o'clock? She said, one. I said, put me in it. She puts me in it. She's the whole time she's trying to convince me, don't do this. That flight's going to be canceled. So what I did was I really made a decision. That was it. I was going home. I was going home on this flight. I really wanted to see, can I really control my circumstances by really focusing on what I think about? So my job now it's 9 o'clock in the morning at this point. So I have to wait 12 hours in the airport for this flight. And everybody around me is bitching and moaning and complaining, and people are yelling at the ticket people and the baggage people. Like, it was a total disaster because of how much disruption there was with the airlines canceling all the flights. And I thought, I can't let any of that into my head. I need to completely hold and focus on to the result that I want. And I did that. So in that process, I kept moving around the airport. Like, every time I was around somebody who was complaining about flights being canceled or whatever, I moved. So I wasn't letting any of that in my mind. And I kept doing that process through the entire day. So I would occasionally look up at the board and I would see that the only flight that was leaving was this 9 o'clock flight. And it wasn't canceled. So the day's going on, it's clicking on, it's not canceled. Around 8 or 8:30, I went to the gate and I sat down and I was very close to the ticket counter. And there's two attendants up at the ticket counter, and they're talking about how there's no way this flight's going to take off. The everything is closed. The story was also that O'Hare Airport was shut down. Like, the whole airport was shut down because of the snow. So there's no way this flight can go. So I'm waiting and waiting. All of a sudden, the flight crew shows up and the pilots show up. And she looks at the pilot and she's like, it's still going. They haven't canceled it. And the pilot just shook his head. He's like, okay, they're going to get everybody on this plane. We're going to get out there, and they're going to cancel it and make us turn around. So he went and got on the plane, and they're still talking about how it's going to be canceled, how it's going to be canceled. I'm like, I'm going home. I'm going home. I'm going home. I would not let go of that thought. Then they say, okay, we're going to board. And as we're boarding, they're telling us, don't get too comfortable because it's going to get canceled and we're going to pull you back off the plane, but we have to board you. So we board the plane. We sit down. Everybody's talking about how the flight's going to be canceled. Then, you know, the pilot gets on the radio and says, they're not canceling the flight. So I guess we're going to take off. He said, you're the only flight that's leaving here today. And if we get in, it'll be the only flight that gets into Chicago today. And be prepared because we may be rerouted in the flight up there. So they close the doors. We take off and we're headed to Chicago. And we get into Chicago and the plane landed. And it actually skidded a little bit sideways when we landed. It was a snow-packed runway. And the pilot announces, you are officially the only flight that got into Chicago today. Congratulations. And the whole plane erupted in applause. And there were even people that when they heard what I did said to me, how could you put your life at risk flying in this major snowstorm like this? And my response was, the pilots know what they're doing. They're professionals. They wouldn't take off and do this if they didn't know that they could get there. So I don't know if that's right or wrong, but that was my story. But this is something that's very interesting with this, though, because it really taught me something. It taught me that we have much more control over our destiny with everything than we think about. Would that happen every time? I don't know. I'm not going to say that it would. I'm not going to say that it wouldn't. But I think that what we experience in life, as far as challenges go, are actually given to us in a way that causes us to learn what our capabilities are. We have challenges. We have obstacles. We have things that go wrong. And we have a choice to look at those things and say, you know what? Every reason why I can't do something is verified in the reality of whatever this obstacle is. We can accept that excuse and not do anything, totally stop. Or we could say, you know what? Here's the obstacle. I'm holding the image in my mind of where it is that I want to go, the result that I want to create for myself, regardless of this obstacle, and not stop. And actually watch ourselves break through every single problem that we could probably break through in our lifetime. It's absolutely amazing what we can do. And I'm really glad that I had that experience, because I think that especially for the first several years that I was really applying this and working on controlling my own thinking to the desired result that I wanted in life, for the first several years that I was doing that, every obstacle that I broke through gave me enough belief, enough confidence, enough courage, enough direction, enough visual direction to break through the next one when it would show up. And they would increasingly get bigger. But this is the great thing about that, though. The idea is the bigger the challenge you break through, the greater the reward that's on the other side of that. So we have to be really careful and not let the reality of a problem control the way that we think. I remember Wallace Wattles talked about it a little bit in The Science of Getting Rich when he said that teaching ourselves how to think the way that we want to think in order to have the success that we desire in life is the hardest work in the world. And the universe wants us to have that success more than we do. So I remember when I first read that and I thought, that's really very interesting. What makes it the hardest work in the world? Well, what makes it the hardest work in the world is that when you're growing, the reality that you're experiencing is consistently suggesting to you that you can't for some reason. And we have to overcome that. So in order to do that, first, we have to understand the truth versus the reality that we're experiencing. If we don't understand the truth, the obstacles literally become so real that we talk ourselves into the idea that we can't actually do it, that we, you know, it's impossible, or there's no way around this problem. And a lot of the obstacles have to do with money, especially when you're talking about business success or financial success. It has to do with people saying yes versus people saying no. It has to do with creating the right circumstances, the right environment. It has to do with building and strengthening your skill sets in life to be able to do the things that you want to do and holding that vision the entire time. And while that's happening, then you have people that are the naysayers and the ones that get jealous of what you're doing and the ones that try to talk you out of it, the ones that are threatened by it. And you have to break through that to literally retrain your mind to think the way that you want it to think to create the results in your life that you want to create. I think the great thing about it, though, is that at some point, if you consistently do it, at some point it actually gets easier because you so retrain your mind how to think that you don't have to make yourself think that way anymore. It's automatic. Like you completely reprogram your thought process. And now when you're creating a goal for yourself, when you are wanting to build something for yourself, if you run into any kind of a problem, instead of looking at it and thinking about, oh hell, how, you know, what am I going to do now? I've got this problem. You automatically start thinking the truth about what it is that you're experiencing. And for instance, like with money, you have whatever amount of money that you have or you don't have in your life. That's the reality of your life in that moment. But that does not mean it's the truth. It just means that that's what you're experiencing. Remember, the truth always encompasses everything about something. It's not just one slice of it or one perspective or one perception or the way that you're only perceiving. You know, when you see the problem, you're only looking at your perception of the thing, of that reality, and you're seeing the problem side of it. You're not seeing the solution side. You have to be able to train your mind to see all sides of a thing so that you can actually see the truth. So with money, you have the amount that you're experiencing, but the truth that governs money and all resources is abundance. There's an abundance of it. And if you bring the law of polarity in and you're working with the side that suggests that you don't have much, you're somewhere in the poverty area or in the lack-minded area. And you're experiencing that in your life. So if you have a problem, let's say you have something that's going to cost a lot of money that happens in your life, and you start to think, I can't do this, that, or the other because I have this problem or this challenge, you're only looking at what the problem suggests to you. So the idea is that we don't give any attention to the ideas of why we can't do something, because the reasons and the how to actually be able to do whatever it is that you want to do, they have to exist at the same time in the same place. So you get very good at training your mind to be able to see those things. You see the opportunities, you see the abundance, you see and can figure out the how, because you hold the idea with your mind that I am not giving up on this idea. I am going to stay steadfast until I get this result. It doesn't matter how long it takes. It doesn't matter what I have to do in order to get that result. I'm going to stick with the idea and I am going to get the result. Now, the longer you do that, the more you link up in your mind the idea of cause and effect. So you actually see and begin to experience that you're the cause of the results that you're actually getting in life. And more that you do that, again, the more confidence you have in doing it, you know, futuristically, and the knowing that there's nothing that can show up other than death that will stop you or take something away or keep you in a place where you can't do it. So I think that it would be really cool if everybody took some time to really think about before the first of the year. Take some time, sit down and think to yourself, okay, I have this ability to create my life however I want to create it. Look at what you have done and what you have not done up to this point in your life and realize that we can use, you know, January 1st, the new year, 2020, as a marker for really designing and creating whatever it is that we want to create. But you have to be clear on what it is. So spend some time really thinking about it. Now, the other thing about this that I think is very important is that I always feel that a person should think about this from the perspective of this is your life and you only get one shot at this. You don't want to go through your life and get to the place where it's too late to change something and then you end up living in regret. You want to really look at the way your life is, what you have done, what you haven't done. Be willing to walk away from your past. You let your past go. No more dwelling in the past, no matter how good or how bad it was. No more dwelling in the past. Create a vision of where you want to go futuristically. Start with the first year. See if you can create that vision. See if you can create a vision for where you would like to be in the next decade. What would you like your life to look like? What would you like to experience? And then start to plan how you're going to make the internal change significant enough so that you, beginning January 1, you do it. You plan to create this. And then the thing that you have to do in order to make this happen is that you have to develop and build trust with yourself. So that means that you bring a new value into your life. And here's what the value is. That you will not say you're going to do something if you're not going to do it. Everything that you say you're going to do, you keep your word and follow through on it. Now, this does a couple of interesting things. One thing that it does is that it should do anyway, is give you pause to think about what you're agreeing to. Because if you come from that new value where you say you're going to do something and you do it, then you won't be as quick to jump at a yes about something without actually thinking it through. Like, what does that mean for you? What does that mean from a time perspective or a financial perspective? So you really think things through about what you want. You're taking things much more seriously in life. And then it rewires your brain so that you will develop a tremendous amount of confidence in yourself when you start being your word with everything and you stick to it. And you'll also find that there's a knowingness of power that comes over you after a short period of time, because you also see that by doing the things that you say you're going to do, you literally create the life that you want. And it really isn't that difficult. You have to create some new habits. You have to let go of the past. You have to build a vision for where you want to go. And then you just repeatedly do it and you don't look back. No matter what it takes, you do what it is that you're going to say, what you're going to do. And the next time that you get held up by the weather, Try what I did and see how well you do with it. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks for listening to the Successful Mind Podcast. And if you like what you heard and you want to know more, go to davidnagel.com/freestuff.